Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 17, 2018. The World Food Program gets help feed families in the former Unity State.
We are very appreciated for this opportunity to participate on the human call to contribute to assist those who suffer from hunger in South Sudan.
And a non-profit organization takes over Bor Hospital.
Doctors of the World decided to focus on this as a very important area for intervention. And we're here in Bor Hospital in order to support the Bor Hospital in many ways.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations World Food Programme says it has received nearly 190 metric tons of food aid from the Qatar Red Crescent and the Kuwait Red Crescent societies. The two organizations are the first to respond to WFP humanitarian appeal for 2018. WFP Director for South Sudan says the two donations will pay for airdrops of food in remote areas of the former Unity State where thousands of people are in dire need of help. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
The Qatar and Kuwait Red Crescent Society say they donated nearly $300,000 worth of food in response to the humanitarian appeal the government of South Sudan and the United Nations made in December. The UN and the government say some 7 million people in South Sudan need humanitarian assistance and 6 million need food assistance this year. Khalid Alam Al-Huda is the Africa coordinator with the Qatar Red Crescent Society.
We are very appreciated for this opportunity to participate on the human call to contribute to assist those who suffer from hunger in South Sudan. Qatar Red Crescent and Qatari people all send their greetings and their help to their brothers in South Sudan, and we hope this assistance will reach to those who need it.
Simon Kamelbeck, WFP's Deputy Country Director for South Sudan, says sacks of sorghum and boxes of super cereals will be airdropped in remote parts of former Unity State, beginning in Ganyel, of the recently created Southern Liège State.
WFP will be able to provide life-saving food assistance through airdrops into some of the most hard-to-reach locations which are battling from worsening food and nutrition security.
People are going hungry due to the ongoing conflict and the drought. Kamelbeck says they need more funding to reach other parts of the country where humanitarian needs are growing by the day. He says the current dry season offers a good opportunity to reach vulnerable communities by road.
Additional resources are urgently required to help us mount an effective and timely response. Some 6 million people are unable to meet their daily food needs already in January this year.
South Sudan Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management Minister Hussein Marnyot says Ganyel and other parts of former Unity State are among the hardest hit areas by hunger.
The condition in Ganyel is not different from other parts of the country. Indeed, people are hit also by drought plus the conflict, and that's why a lot of people are suffering. Greater Unity State last year, it was some two counties were declared as famine areas, but we are hoping that this year things will look better if a lot of resources are put in place.
Nyot is urging other donor countries to get involved.
We are grateful for the support that has been extended to us and would like to appeal to other donors and partners to continue supporting us in South Sudan.
The United Nations is asking for more than $1.7 billion to provide life-saving humanitarian assistance to 6 million people across South Sudan this year. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The Ministry of Health in Jonglei State has signed a memorandum of understanding with a non-profit called Doctors of the World Spain, authorizing the organization to run Bor Hospital for 5 months. Jonglei State Ministry says Doctors of the World will provide medical services and pay incentives to doctors, nurses, and laboratory technicians. Dengai Deng has this story for VOA from Bor.
State Health Minister Dr. Ango Gordon Kwol hails the decision by Doctors of the World to run Bor Hospital, calling it a positive move that will improve the delivery of medical services to the state's vulnerable people. Kwol says the non-profit began supporting the hospital last November.
We are understanding that we are in economical crisis, so they also start to provide some little incentive for the staff who are working with them in the hospital. So we appreciate their input.
Nicholas Tremblin is a logistician for Doctors of the World in Bor.
We're aware of the needs in areas such as the Bor Hospital. So Doctors of the World decided to focus on this as a very important area for intervention. And we're here in Bor Hospital in order to support the Bor Hospital in many ways. Firstly, it's in maternity and in pediatric and also outpatients. We are looking at renovations to the existing structures.
Last year, Bor Hospital said at least half of the hospital nurses and laboratory technicians left their job due to low pay and long delays in their government paid salaries, causing most workers to spend only a few hours a day at work. Kwol says the incentive from Doctors of the World will encourage the doctors, nurses, and other staff to work their full shift at the hospital and improve medical services.
Already we are seeing signs of improvement. The cleanliness in the hospital has improved. Attendance of the staff has improved. And provision of some essential medicine to our patients also has improved.
The minister says hospital staff will continue to receive salaries from the government along with the incentive from Doctors of the World. He says a doctor will receive 5,000 South Sudanese pounds and $190 as incentive per month, and nurses will receive 3,000 South Sudanese pounds and $124 as incentive. Lab technician will get 2,000 South Sudanese pounds and $116 incentive, according to Kwol. Bor Hospital pharmacist Abraham Garangdao says he appreciates the support from Doctors of the World.
Now we become happier because we know Doctor of the World, they are going to improve our activities. Because last time when you force people to work, they refuse to work. But now if they know there is motivation, they will do their work.
Bor Hospital lab technician Simon Nyongmach says while he too is grateful for the support, he says the government should provide medical equipment and supplies.
Most of the items in the lab are out of stock and we have nowhere to get them. If government can really help in supplying frequently the medical supplies for the hospital, I think that will be very better.
Pediatric doctor Gangrej says the extra support will improve Bor Hospital service delivery, but he worries about the long-term funding.
Just want to say thank you to Doctors of the World. They come here to support us. I think you have seen they are working in the waste management in the hospital. It's something good that they show up already. That's the only thing I know that they come for a short time. And we hope that, according to them, they said they don't have fun, but they will try to keep up with the work.
Bor Hospital employs 5 doctors, 47 nurses, and 10 lab technicians, and is the state main health facility. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
Some residents of Yambio Town in Budu Estate say life is starting to return to normal after 3 years of fighting. A state government minister attributes the peaceful atmosphere to President Salva Kiir's move to integrate rebels of the South Sudan National Liberation Movement into government forces through an amnesty program. Gift Friday has this story for VOA from Juba.
Moses Samuel is a youth from Yambio who says residents can now access farms that had been abandoned for years due to insecurity.
We can access some areas which were sometimes last year inaccessible, Now, with our own integration, we have just realized that there is peace in the state.
Another Yambi resident, Agnes Gini, says women were not able to travel even 1 mile outside of town for fear of rape and other sexual assaults. Speaking in Arabic, Gini says they are now free to travel as far as they need to go to access their farms.
We are happy with the integration of those boys who were in the bush. We can now go and cultivate so that our children can have enough food.
Yambi resident Gordon Wilson says he now feels safe now because rebels no longer attack unarmed civilians.
Now people are free because there is no rebel we are fearing in the bush, and we are now free to do whatever our business, our activities, which can help develop this country.
Budo State Local Government Minister Jackson Ezekiel Bogwa says the improved security in Yambia follows President Kiir's move to integrate former rebels into government forces.
All those who are carrying arms against the government, who are fighting the government in this state, the majority have come home. They have joined the government now. And I'm happy also to say that until now, we don't have SSLM forces and we don't have SPLA-IO defected to government because those we had in this state had been integrated.
But Bogwa says some armed groups are still hiding in the bush. State officials are encouraging rebels still at large to put down their weapons and accept the general amnesty declared by the government. Bogwa says he expects residents to resume farming activities when the rainy season starts in April. Abel Dominic, executive director for a local NGO called Human Rights Civil Society Organization in Budwe State, says women and children finally feel secure after years of living in fear of being abused by armed forces.
The past year, 2017, I've seen a little joy I've never seen before as the war was here. So I really see that people were very happy during Xmas time and the new year because they never had any sound of a gun.
In December 2017, President Kiir issued a presidential decree in which he promoted 141 former fighters of the South Sudan National Liberation Movement in Budwe State to various ranks in the government's organized forces. The audio in this story was courtesy of a fellow journalist working for Yambio FM in Budwe State capital, Yambio. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
We now turn to Kenya, where members of the Sengwa community who live in Embubut Forest, 400 kilometers from Nairobi, are facing eviction from their ancestral communal land. The government has deployed security forces to evict the community in an effort to preserve forest cover. Linen Ruvaga reports from Eldoret.
78-year-old Thomas Chelimo is from the Sengwa community, which resides in Eldoret. Chelimo and his wife Pauline have called the Embubut Forest home all their lives. However, on January 1st, their home, together with others, was razed to the ground, allegedly by Kenya Forest Service KFS rangers, in a bid to force the Sengwa out of the forest. The forest is a critical water supply area. Chelimo says that the forest eviction by the government agency will render them homeless and landless. He says he was born and raised in the forest, as was his father and grandfather, and he says that the forest is the only place he knows as home. He says his family of children and grandchildren all ran away because of fear of eviction. Leah Toreitich and her husband Abraham say that although the government initiated a compensation program about 3 years ago where resident families were given $4,000 each to relocate, genuine community members did not get any money at all. He said that they have heard the government give out compensation to community members, but he claims the majority of people have not received any money yet. The European Union is funding a $37 million six-year program to protect the ecosystem. International law expert Rosalind Amadi says the Kenyan constitution protects the rights of the Sengwa.
There is this dichotomy that if they are there, then they are destroying the environment. And I think that is what has happened, and that is the conflict that we are having. So whereas you have the right to preserve the environment for present and future generation, you also have the issue of development, and you also have the cultural rights of the people.
But Amnesty International Kenya campaign coordinator Naomi Baraza says the eviction of the minority community from their indigenous home is a violation of their fundamental right to shelter.
Kenya as a state is going against regional, international and local treaties that safeguard human rights, because the Sengwer issue, the rights of the indigenous people, rights to housing, are anchored in our constitution, international law, that Kenya is a treaty to, so it's purely a human rights issue, and it also affects the lives of the people.
The Kenyan government has not responded to VOA's request for comment on the evictions. But for Thomas Chelimo and others from the Sengwer community, the evictions mean an uncertain future. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Embobut Forest.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how did Africa fare on global development in 2017? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you good at organizing your daily activities?
I can't say that I'm very good at organizing my daily schedule, because at some point I could have an emergency thing which would lead me to, you know, not to follow my daily schedule.
There's no way you can wake up and just go anyhow. You have to organize. I'm going to do this at this time and this at that time. So, of course, I organize myself. Most of the time, it's not easy.
Yes, I do. Because, like today, I went to church. Because I know yesterday, I know that I'm going to church by 8. Then from church, that's when I relax. I have nothing to do again.
Of course I can, because personally, I have a diary. So I get to note down everything that I'm going to do, like, throughout the day or throughout the week. So each day, I'm always alert.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. 2017 was the 12th consecutive year of decline in global freedom, according to Freedom House annual world report. While experts say China, Russia, and North Korea, among other countries, put global stability at an increased risk, there are signs of progress and global developments across other regions, including Latin America and Africa. VOA's Elizabeth Shanef brings us this report.
Democracy in decline and under assault from nearly every corner of the world. That's according to a new Freedom House report that tracks civil liberties and other democratic freedoms across countries. Arch Puddington is a Freedom House scholar.
For the 12th consecutive year, freedom was on the decline across the globe. And by that we mean that there are more countries, in the case of 2017, many more countries that showed declines in freedom than showed improvements.
That includes the United States, where an ongoing probe into Russian meddling in the 2016 election has weakened the country's status as a model for democracy. Russia's disinformation campaigns throughout European elections were also cited as a factor in undermining democratic norms worldwide. In countries like China, experts see a pattern of intensifying repression and censorship under the country's leader, Xi Jinping. The mass exodus of Rohingya Muslims from Myanmar's Rakhine State into Bangladesh highlights a worsening humanitarian crisis amounting to what many, including the U.S., are calling ethnic cleansing. Following the ouster of Zimbabwe's president, Robert Mugabe, experts expressed cautious optimism for the country's political future.
Zimbabwe declined in our scores for 2017, but this was largely due to the fact that, you know, President Mugabe was pushed out by non-democratic means, and he was succeeded through non-democratic means. We do hope that some of the promises that have been made of reform and liberalization and serious democratic elections over the next year, we hope that these promises are fulfilled.
There are signs of progress across South and Central America, including in Mexico, where voters will elect a new president this year.
One of the candidates in that election has a populist background, and if he were to win, there might be some interesting changes in Mexico's policies.
Despite ongoing wars in both countries, Freedom House experts say they'll also be watching Iraq and Afghanistan's elections this year for signs of further progress toward a civilian government. And in the shadow of neighboring countries China and North Korea, experts see continued signs of political development for South Korea and Taiwan.
The fact that you've had democratically elected governments that are willing to push through political reforms is something that's a positive as well.
Elizabeth Cherneff, VOA News, Washington.
Burundi's government recently proposed constitutional changes that would, among other things, allow President Pierre Nkurunziza to stay in office beyond 2020. Civil society groups say the government is arresting people opposed to the changes in advance of an upcoming referendum. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf and Elu Kinza has details from Nairobi.
Officially, Burundi's government has banned anyone from campaigning for or against the proposed changes to the constitution, but civil society groups accuse the government of targeting those suspected to urging voters to reject the changes. The head of Burundi's Forum for Strengthening the Civil Society, Vital Nshirimana, says people cannot make free choices.
Yeah, so far there is dozens of people, about 60 people were arrested in many sides of the country. And this is one of the signs showing that the referendum should not be fair, since those campaigning against the no are arrested, while those campaigning for the yes are not arrested.
The government says the changes are aimed at strengthening and advancing the country's laws after more than 2 years of political violence. The violence was triggered in April 2015 when President Nkurunziza announced he will run for a controversial third term. Opponents said he was violating constitutional term limits and the peace deal that ended Burundi's civil war. Now, critics believe Nkurunziza is maneuvering to stay in power beyond the end of his current term in 2020. Hamisi Sultan represents opposition party FNL, which is against the constitutional change. He was arrested on January 2nd. It is the prosecutor of Ruyigi province who issued an arrest warrant against me. I was questioned and I was accused of organizing and leading a group meeting aimed at sanitizing people to vote against the proposed constitutional change. We were with friends having fun and some of them were arrested too. We were accused of participating in an illegal meeting aimed at opposing the draft constitution. Sultan was released after 3 days without charge. The president deputy spokesman, Alain Domide, says the government is educating its people on the proposed changes, but no one is allowed to advance for passing or rejecting them.
The government is explaining to the electorate the content of the constitution. I mean, some articles that are likely to change, etc. There is no campaign to vote yes or no. The campaign has not yet started. So when you teach people to vote no and the campaign has not started, you understand that you're running against the law.
Burundians will vote on the proposed changes in May. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The UN's World Food Program is getting a big helping hand from the Qatar Red Crescent and the Kuwait Red Crescent Societies to feed thousands of hungry people in the former Unity State. The two groups are the first to respond to the WFP's 2018 humanitarian appeal and will send nearly 190 metric tons of food to the country. A WFP official in South Sudan says the two donors will fund airdrops in areas that are inaccessible by road as well. Both the UN and the government say 7 million South Sudanese are in need of humanitarian assistance and some 6 million need food. The Africa coordinator with Qatar's Red Crescent Society says the Qatari people are happy to help the people of South Sudan and hope that their assistance will reach those who need it most. The WFP's deputy country director for South Sudan says sacks of sorghum and boxes of super cereals will be airdropped in remote parts of former Unity State, beginning in Ganyel. Many South Sudanese struggle to find food due to the ongoing conflict and the drought. South Sudan Humanitarian Affairs Minister Hussein Mar Niat says Ganyel and other parts of the state are among the hardest hit areas by hunger. The Jonglei State Health Ministry has signed a memorandum of understanding with a nonprofit called Doctors of the World Spain, authorizing the group to operate Bor Hospital for 5 months. Jonglei State's health minister says Doctors of the World will provide medical services and pay incentives to doctors, nurses, and laboratory technicians who work at the hospital. State Health Minister Dr. Angok Gordon Kwal praised the decision by Doctors of the World to run Bor Hospital, saying it'll improve the delivery of medical services to the state's most vulnerable. The nonprofit began supporting the hospital last November. Last year, Bor Hospital officials said at least half the hospital's nurses and lab technicians left their jobs due to low pay and long delays in their government-paid salaries, causing most workers to spend only a few hours a day at work. Kwal says the incentives from the nonprofit will encourage the doctors and other medical staff to work their full shifts at the hospital. And finally, residents of the Gubudwe state capital, Yambio, say life is starting to return to normal after 3 years of on-and-off fighting. A state government minister attributes the peaceful atmosphere now to President Kiir's decision to integrate rebels of the South Sudan National Liberation Movement into government forces through the government's amnesty program. Yambio Moses Samuel says residents can now access farms that have been abandoned for years due to insecurity. Another resident says women were not able to travel even 1 mile outside of town for fear of rape or other sexual assault. Speaking, Jeannie says they are now free to travel as far as they need to go to access their farms. Another Yambio resident, Gordon Wilson, says he now feels safe because rebels no longer attack unarmed civilians and business can be developed in the area. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Independence by Dynamic.
Dynamic. Beletena South Sudan Ligo independence Dunia kulugali inanasigo wikalis Minjubale turiti na badaguna woyoi Mashakin futu Beletena jedi Beletena Ligo Beletena Ligo Belle Tain Aligo, South Sudan Ligo, Belle Tain Aligo. Wahiyam, Gebila Taki, Gebila Tani, Kulusawa. Motoroka Nenzil,
Malinezil Vipe,
Wajojojojo, Mina Kulu, Wakulu, Minsa, Hanwahi. Tatani leyal te ina de South Sudan wojaya Belle Tain Aligo.
We have been listening to Dynamic with the song Independence. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us on southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us out on our Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kulu, Nina Kulu, Ahit Mama.
South Sudan, Nina Kulua Hits. Kedena Abinu Bele Teinata, South Sudan. Oh, yeah!